Franklin once said, "Tell me and I forget. Teach me and I remember. Involve me and I learn." Hello everyone and welcome to Nerdy Optometrist, a podcast channel for all things optometry. This is your host, Ukti Vora. Our guest for today is an experienced independent practitioner in his stunningly refurbished and contemporized Victorian house practice from Northam, UK. He's a past president of the BCLA and a former AOP Contact Lens Practitioner of the Year. He lectures internationally on business, imaging technology, dry eye, and specialized contact lens topics, all based on real-life experience in the consulting room. Brian learned that people retain more by being entertained while being educated. So since that time, his lectures and workshops have been interactive and fun, sometimes even hilarious, but always informative. He is optometry's best known edutainer. I'm so happy and excited to welcome Mr. Brian Tompkins for this podcast episode. Thank you so much and welcome.
Hi, good to see you all. Well, not see you, but actually, I guess, not hear you either, but I shall be that ghostly voice in the distance that you may listen to in the car, at the breakfast table, at the dinner table, or while drinking a glass of wine.
Well, a voice which I'm sure will be inspiring and fun, as you mentioned that you are an edutainer, and it is so nice to, you know, have you on the podcast.
Absolutely fine.
All right. So, Brian, let's just directly dive into my first and my favorite question is, how did you bump into this career of eye care or optometry?
Pretty much straight from school. Wanted to do healthcare. Wasn't smart enough to do doctoring or dentistry. Optometry was a lower grade requirement. And I kind of just broke my glasses a few weeks before the grades were needed and the exams were being taken and the courses were being chosen. Spoke to the optometrist at the time I was using, and kind of felt a nice mix of science, but elements of fashion with elements of mechanics and engineering, and very much a people kind of job. So, yeah, I hit the profession direct from school, straight to uni, and straight into working.
Oh, very interesting. I like how you mentioned two things here. One, about, you know, talking to an optometrist to kind of know how their day looks like. And the second thing about, you know, how you expanded optometry's scope into fashion, engineering, business. And, you know, it's so much more than just science, or where people think it could just be something which is inside four walls of a clinic. So we're going to talk a little more about both these things. But my first question is it really common practice? Because I've seen few of my guests mentioning that when someone comes out from the school, they do go and talk to the specialist. It could be optometrist, dentist, physiotherapist, you know, whichever profession they're planning to go into. Do you feel it's a common practice among students or people in UK to actually reach out and understand how that professional's life looks like?
I think probably sadly not. We intern quite a few students from around the world. So we've pre-COVID certainly had visitors from Australia, from America, from Italy, from Finland, from Norway, from Sweden, from Holland. And they've come and spent some time in the practice, and I kind of really enjoyed revisiting things that we see day to day, which we could deem potentially boring. But when you explain them to a student and they've never seen them before, it's kind of exciting, and you regain a lot of the excitement that you would otherwise have.
Right.
We've not had as many from Britain, so we actually haven't had that interaction. And I do wonder whether current students are really quite as passionate when they go in, or whether it's just, I need a job, what shall I do? Oh, that looks okay, let's try that. Which takes the heart out of the profession for the future, in my thinking.
I think it's really interesting that you have people coming from all across the world. Do you feel you showing your practice in a particular setup versus, you know, how it is practiced, say, in Australia or Italy? How do you find and show them what are the common grounds here? Do you feel it really matters?
The common ground is we have a pair of eyes that we need to deal with, or usually a pair, and they belong to a person. Uh-huh. That person has needs and requirements, and our job is to make their lives as happy visually, mentally, and clarity-wise as we can possibly have. And so consequently, the common ground is we're all dealing in eye care. That's really quite simple and straightforward. Are practices the same? No, I think restrictions on the scope of practice. Mm-hmm. The UK, for example, is not automatically prescribing capable, although there is a new and fabulous breed of optom coming through that can take further qualifications to become therapeutic qualified. Mm-hmm. But the Australians we have, it's a different course.
Right.
And they're immediately drug friendly, as are the Americans. So it'll vary a lot on the country that's coming, but there's always something to teach and something to learn. So any student coming is always going to teach me new stuff from their current, modern, up-to-date knowledge and also from their country's culture stroke optometry culture. So always learning, always passing on knowledge, and always hoping that you can help future professionals.
That's awesome. I totally agree that whatever the rules or regulations, the scope of practice might differ, but basic optometry or eye care would still remain same wherever in the world you are. So I'm glad that, you know, people are coming and trying to see different practices and, you know, learning from you. Now, talking about your journey is, I feel, very interesting, because you have your practice, you are a speaker, you are a passionate photographer, an award-winning photographer for, you know, taking clinical images. So I want to know all about your journey, if you can, you know, share, like, how did it start?
How many hours have you got? It's been 40 plus years. Straight out of uni into a really dedicated pre-registration post, and the guy was passionate about his optometry. Always independent, never been in any form of multiple. So always working in practice. I have never, and I will never, work in a store. Mm-hmm. The term store is an anathema to me. We should be working in a clinical practice. We are not retailers, purely and simply.
Right.
And went from the pre-registration qualification into a really nice, old, established practice, which is where I am now. Mm-hmm. It was my hometown. The guy who I joined, I'd been at school with his son, a year above, but nevertheless. So he was a long established. The practice was established in 1868 from a jeweler optician.
Mm-hmm.
The Knight grandfather had the son join the company, and so it became Knight and Son.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately then that son had two sons, so they were the grandsons of the founder. And all four were optometrists of the Knight family. And I joined them in 76, mm-hmm. 1976, before most of you guys were born. And ultimately carried on, worked, went into partnership in about 1980 and took over the business in 1985. And it's been mine and my wife's ever since. And ultimately there's been no Knight at part of the journey, but we've tried to carry on the traditions of service, the traditions of service culture. We've tried to carry on the clinical excellence, and we've tried to get into and work with the best leading edge technologies, with the best techniques, with the best contact lenses, with the best spectacle lenses, and the most fashionable frames. So everything should be at the pinnacle of its capability.
That's really interesting point that you made about, you know, always aim for the best.
Okay, so really, it's a really simple way to look at it. And if you don't treat your patients this way, then you're not going to be successful. What would you give to your mother?
Mm.
If you're not going to give your mother the very best care, the very best quality of lens, spectacle lens, contact lens, the very best looking and comfortable frame, which may have the highest price bracket, but you're not going to care because it's your mum. So you're going to give that.
Right.
Why would you ever treat any patient any less well than your mother?
Well, that is an amazing thought, but I have a follow-up question regarding that.
Okay.
How do you, share the same sentiment with the patient? Because sometimes, I'm not sure, I'm just saying with a very limited experience that I have in this field, would be how sometimes it might get difficult to try, and even though you're providing the best care, to convey that message to the patient. How do you do that?
Trust. Long-standing relationship. I've seen some patients for the last 45 years. They've been with me all that time. So if they don't trust me, they're not going to come back.
Right.
So if they trust me to give the best advice, then you're trusted to give the very best education and the very best professional care. Now, there may be sometimes elements of cost, and there may be budget constraints.
Right.
But you can never assume someone cannot pay. You should never assume someone doesn't want to have the best. So you are giving them an absolute disservice if you say, have this, it's good enough for you. It wouldn't be good enough for me, so why would I downgrade their thinking?
Right. I really loved this part of, I feel sometimes as an optometrist, because we are just working more mechanically than being passionate about it, we can start with assumptions. And as you rightly mentioned, feel, this is good enough for you, but not the best. And prejudge before even giving an option for the patient to choose. So I feel this is such an important point, which I would really like to thank you for bringing it up. And I think this is something that we all need to always, always remember, probably put it on a post-it and stick it somewhere where you can read every single day, that always give the best and don't prejudge.
It should never be mechanical. Every single patient has something different and individual about them.
Right.
So there's never a day goes by that you're not surprised by something. Entertained by something, enlightened by something, and educated by something that a patient brings to the table and says something different, or shows you something different, or you find a clinical or other finding that's different. So every day is a school day.
Wonderful. I think this is so refreshing to, start thinking from this perspective. Now, talking about education and entertainment, I really loved the part that you mentioned in your introduction, that you have realized that people retain more if they're being entertained as well as educated. And this entire term of edutainer, I loved it. And I want to understand, what's the story behind it?
If I don't enjoy life, why would I then make a patient enjoy life? The idea is to enjoy what you do. So you go in and understand that every single day is going to be entertaining to you. Now, if it's entertaining to you, why would you not want to make it entertaining for that patient? So the way you say things, how you say things, the jokes you tell, not just a remote no passion joke, but just the way you speak to that patient should be comfortable, should be relaxed. They should feel like they're being made special. And so essentially, you in that consulting room, with or without the door closed in COVID times, but you in that consulting room are on stage. You are performing to that single patient. And that performance should change the moment you walk through the door with that patient. So you might have had the grumpiest journey into work. You might have nearly crashed the car. You might have had run over a cat, whatever the terrible life you had coming into that consulting room. But you should click your ear, click your finger, and go into the persona that is the happy, smiley optometrist when you go into that room.
When you said that, you are a performer and the clinic room is your stage, and your patient is your audience who's going to trust you, learn from you, and is trying to, make the best out of the experience that they're trying to achieve in the clinic.
But if you have a partner of the person in the room, where I always try and take in a husband or wife, and I know during COVID we are being more careful, but ultimately with the right PPE and the right distancing, then the partner can come in. Mm-hmm. It's so much better. And we're 100%, 1,000% going to have the parent of the children, often both if we can. Mm-hmm. Because maybe the pair, the husband or wife of the patient you're seeing has never been to you before, but if they see how you perform, mm-hmm. if they see your care, if they see your capabilities, then they become a patient. So you are right. entertaining the room. And if the room requires some interaction, the wife may say, I wear my glasses on a regular basis. The husband may butt in and say, no, you don't. And it's a it's an amazing way to get right. the family involved, and you hear the truth. You hear the interactions that people have with themselves,
right?
Particularly with children. So you get to hear whether they have been good with their glasses or not.
Right. And that also, I really loved how you mentioned, you know, you can get the truth if you have the family member in there. Also, you can convert the partner or the family member into your patient as well, because you are building trust of two or three people at the same time. So you are investing less of your time.
You're building your patient database, which means you're building your ultimate income. So it's a marketing right. tool of par excellence.
Right, absolutely. I agree to that 100%. And I think if people start thinking about having the family members in the room, not just to because it's a requirement, but thinking that this could be a potential patient and I can help and expand my scope of practice, it will be so much more better if we start thinking on those lines. I think that is a fantastic point that you just brought it up. So when you talk about teaching the patient, I just read one research article which was fascinating for me, that when you educate the patient, especially kids, about, say, wearing glasses, for example, they have seen patients who are educated have higher success rate of, you know, following your treatment, whether it's glasses or contact lenses, versus those who are not educated. And you are so passionate about, you know, educating patient. How is your process? Like, how do you teach the patient, you know, about certain conditions, about your service that you're providing?
Never stop talking. So you're telling them what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're telling them why you're doing it. You're telling them how you're doing it. You're showing them on the massive screen that's right in front of their face so that they can see their own fundus, their own optic nerve, their own refraction results, their own cornea, their own OCT results, their own topography results. If you are not showing them, you are not entertaining them. If you're not entertaining them, you're not educating them. And if you're educating them, they will remember and they will be compliant in what you ask them to do.
Right.
So as a consequence, if you were asking them to clean their lenses, take MacuShield, do anything that is for their benefit, if you don't show them with a picture or a video or some element of grading scales, we're using remote grading and artificial intelligence grading these days, mm-hmm. and anything that elucidates for that patient their picture, the more they'll retain, the more they'll go home and talk about it. If they talk about it in the old days at dinner parties and at the hairdressers, then that's another marketing tool that is free of charge.
Right, right. I think this is one thing which I want to highlight about practices. I've seen this educating or talking to the patient happens. I've seen a few doctors doing here and there, but most of them just come in, do their job. At the end, you're like, okay, yeah, this is the result. This is what I found. You know, just get your glasses. But we fail to educate the patient at each step what we are doing, because they are equally curious about the entire process. So instead of they Googling things and, you know, coming up with assumptions, if we talk to them and educate them, it would be such a satisfying process versus someone sitting in your office and trying to assume what you're doing.
The internet is marvelous, but it's also a massive portfolio of misinformation.
Absolutely.
So if you want the patient to learn from you, because you're the educated one, you are the optometrist with knowledge about their case and their needs, and you have an absolute dedicated treatment plan, whatever that may be, if you don't tell them why, how, and when you're going to do things, then that will fail your treatment and compliance on lens cleaning, lid hygiene, spectacle wearing will fail by comparison. So a fully educated, and I'll go back to entertained, patient will retain that information and know what's going on.
Right. I agree 100% to that. And I think that is definitely a very important key message, where you always have to explain why you're doing it, what you're doing it, and how it is going to impact their life or the care that you're providing. So if these questions are answered within the clinic or the setup you are in before the patient steps out of it, I think it will be such a rewarding relationship with your patient.
It goes back to trust. If they trust you,
absolutely,
they will stay with you. And our business is one of retention. We're not, you know, we're seeing sometimes only 3, maximum 4 patients in a morning or an afternoon now because COVID's dropped that number. But we are spending so much dedicated time with them. Let's be honest, we're in business as well, and they are accepting our knowledge. They're taking our advice. They're investing in greater processes. So IPL, for example, or any of the further eyelid cleansings that we do. And they are buying products. And in truth, it looks at the moment that the last quarter in 2020, which has been hit by fewer numbers and ultimately all the restrictions on lockdowns, etc. in the UK, we're probably doing a better income in 2020 than we were in 2019 with twice the number of people. Because we sit and talk and dedicate our time with those patients, and they appreciate that and invest in our business.
That's really interesting what you share here. I feel that I've seen that with a couple of practices as well who I talk to, like, you know, just because of the connections I have. And they did mention the exact same thing, that now you have more time. You are not rushing around. You're not trying to, like, you know, squeeze in so many patients within a day. And you might feel that people would not buy or, you know, spend on treatments, but now they are more invested in you because you are also more invested in your patients and spending time with them. So definitely this shows how, you know, educating and entertaining them helps to build trust and, you know, positively impact your business. So that's definitely something that is all built in together. Now, I'm going to divert our conversation a little towards your photography skills, and, you know, how did that happen, and if you could, you know, talk about that journey.
Probably just because I tend to be a visual learner, so I'm much more based images. If you give me a whole bunch of text, I tend to go back away from it. My younger son is quite dyslexic. He's a phenomenally good chef, so his brain organization is such that he's extremely skilled at other skill sets other than just picking up words and reading them and putting them down on paper. I kind of almost wonder, looking at all the various symptoms, whether I've just got some similar characteristic of not wanting to look at text, or I'm just a visual learner, whatever that is. So I've always been interested in any aspect of imagery, whether it be video, photography, whatever it is. And investing a very long time, 25 more plus years ago, in slit lamp photography at the time, it just worked. And that goes back to that edutaining and educating the patient. Here is a picture of the dirty front of your contact lens. Buy new ones rather than, I think your lens is dirty, you should buy new ones. Yeah, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He can't tell. Whereas you show them the picture of their own dirty lashes, their horrible makeup, then blocked meibomian glands, their red eye, the scratch, the ulcer. If you show them their picture of their problem, they will understand what's going
on. Right. And also, it's a known fact, right? Majority of our learnings are done through eyes. So why not show them the picture? So I really liked how you mentioned that, you know, showing them and educating them really helps in, you know, providing the treatment in the right direction, what you're trying to do. So do you have any tips and tricks about what's your process?
It will depend massively on what kind of photographic equipment you've got. But I think anybody with a slit lamp by a microscope should have some form of camera attached. And there are actually now plenty of iPhone attachment cameras. There are other phones available. So there are plenty of ways to capture images. And in fact, if you follow myself, if you follow my colleague, Dr. Patel, who is OptomedGeek, mm-hmm. And if you follow a colleague called Hamza, who's the crazy optom, right. We all have Instagram images that are of clinical interest, and many of those are taken on an iPhone. So it's something where you have to see the image. You have to have a mind that picks up that image and realizes that that's a good one or that's not a good one. And if you ask someone to take photographs for you, mm-hmm. I am frequently disappointed that they're not great quality because they didn't notice there was a bin in the corner or there was a piece of hair falling across the face of the person behind the one in front. And it's kind of attention to detail and seeing, mm-hmm. looking, really watching what you're taking that photograph of and capturing it at that exact perfect moment.
Right. You are a believer of having technology, and you, as you mentioned, you have the latest technology. How has that been? How has it helped you in the business overall? And what are your thoughts of, you know, investing in the latest technologies?
We're currently the UK Technology Practice of the Year mm-hmm. in the kind of Optician Awards. I guess initially, but now my colleagues have joined in that passion. We love the fact that there is more and more clever technological diagnostic equipment out there. We are always looking to enhance our skill set and find ever cleverer ways to diagnose, to treat, to investigate, and show the patient this is what the shape of your keratoconus is. This is the level of dryness you're showing on the front of your eye because your blink is within 5 seconds, not 15, because your eyelashes are scaled like this. You have Demodex, therefore there's a problem with it. So every aspect of technology does a different job. They do it extremely well. The COVID period's had an amazing uplift on technological advances because a lot of the developers have been stuck at home. So they've been sitting with their computers making their equipment and their software and their algorithms better.
Right.
You know, we have the advanced ophthalmic system software, which works as an artificial intelligence grading scale. We have the Oculus K5, which is a piece of fabulous kit for dry eye and topography for our keratoconic patients. And we've got the eye surface profiler, which is a scleral topographer of excellence, which allows us to understand and beginning to understand that more and more the sclera is more complex than we first thought. So scleral lens fitting, which is one of our kind of specialities now, it is a very different animal to what we thought. We thought it was a flat plane, but it's not at all. It's really, really, really quite complex when you look at it intensely. So all of that investment in technology allows you to excel in what you do. And I'll call it the routine technologies, although they're by no means routine. We have an OptiMap, California OptiMap, and we use a Sweat Source OCT, and that's for every single patient coming through the door now. Ultimately, you have to understand that they are kind of big investments, but they are a big model that allows you to get a return on them. So if you charge accordingly, and that is super important, we are not, as I said earlier, storekeepers. We are clinicians. We charge for our clinical time. We charge for our clinical skill set. Then ultimately, the return on that investment is large. So it's a profit-making exercise having technology in the practice.
Right. I feel that here you really mentioned one really important point of charging the patient correctly, or if you're investing, because that's where I actually was having my follow-up question, but you already answered that, that people might be hesitant because this is a heavy investment. So you might feel, oh, you know what, I don't think I'm ever going to get the returns. But if you're educating and you're charging correctly as an optometrist, as a clinician, and not as, as you know, a retailer, you can definitely get the returns because you're educating the patient, building the trust, and offering the treatment, which will ultimately support your business. So I feel it's equally important to, you know, balance out all these pieces first and then make sure that you have the topmost technology available there. Now, if you have been, you know, an international speaker, you have people coming from all around the places, you have been in practice for so many years. If you have to, you know, pick or discuss some major gaps in the eye care practice today that you've seen in the community, what would that be?
Tough one. Maybe passion. Maybe there is not quite that absolute dedicated care level. If a student goes in seeing it as a job, not a career, not a lifestyle, not a thing to invest their time in and out of practice, then, you know, the thing lacking is the passion. Anything else, I think, is getting better and better. The technologies are better. The contact lens materials are better. The spectacle lenses are better. The understanding of things like myopia management, dry eye with the TFOS juice too. The optics of the more complex multifocal toric contact lenses coming through. The understanding of the sclera. So everything is getting better and better, and I think there's probably not a gap in the knowledge. Whether every practitioner has that knowledge is an entirely different matter. There are some practitioners who really focus on the retinal structure. There are some practitioners who really focus on the cornea and the lenticular, the front bits, the window. And it's very hard to be specialist in all of those factors, but you know, there is always someone who you will know will have a better knowledge. So maybe referring to colleagues is less efficient than it ought to be. There may be some aspects of that which would be better sourced if we trusted our colleagues to help us. Tough one to know. But I don't think there's I don't see a gap in anything at this minute.
That's good to know. But yeah, I think passion could be one factor, which, you know, if you do not have it, it'll become more of a mechanical work or something which, you know, would have no heart or life in it. But being passionate can definitely help you achieve a lot more success in whatever you're trying to do.
I think you've got to care. And if you don't care, there's no point.
Absolutely. I love that word. Yes, you definitely need to care. And if you care like it's your mother or someone very close to your family, you will always be passionate about treating and, you know, taking care of them. So I think those are really wonderful points that you made right there. So we did talk a lot about your journey, about technology, about your practice. Now I'm going to dive into a fun segment called Rapid Fire, where it's going to be knowing a little more about you and less of optometry. The rule is simple. I'll be asking you questions and you have to tell me the first answer or the fastest answer that you can.
Okay.
All right. So my first question, which is your favorite cuisine?
Cuisine?
Mm-hmm.
The world. There is no favorite. I can be in love with Italian, I could be in love with Indian, I could be in love with Mexican, I could be in love with Japanese, and every one of those has superb excellences. But sometimes I might want beans on toast. So it's of the moment.
All right. Wonderful. Now, if you had a superpower, what do you think it would be?
Invisibility.
All right. Any particular reason for that?
Yeah, I could go and see the patients and see whether they really did what I was asking them to do.
All right. I like that. Now, your favorite destination?
If I say home, it's really boring because whenever you've been somewhere, tough. We had a house in Spain, so that was kind of on top. But I again, there's no single favorite. There is no one place I would always want to go. I'll explore the Far East. I've never been South America, so that would be fun. North America, love. Whole of Europe. I mean, within 2 hours, normally we can fly to a completely different culture and cuisine, and every single one of them is amazing for their own reason. But there's no one single place that stands out.
Mm-hmm. All right. What do you prefer doing the most? Okay, rank in the order of your preference. Clinical practice, giving talks, taking clinical photography. Rank in the order, what do you like doing the most?
Talks is fun because you interact with an audience of, I don't know, biggest audience, a couple of thousand, smallest audience is one, but you're interacting with them. Clinical practice gives me the information about the things I talk about. So if I didn't do clinical practice, I wouldn't be able to talk. It would be a pointless exercise.
Right.
And I can't remember what the third one was. The photography. Well, the photography gives me the data for going into the lecture. So the talks, the clinical practice, and then the photography.
All right. Wonderful. If we were to write an autobiography about your journey, what would you like that title to be?
He tried.
I like that.
I guess actually better would be he tried to be funny.
All right. All right. And he succeeded. I have to say that. All right. Last question. If we were to add or remove something from an optometry curriculum, what would that be?
Well, in the UK, I'd probably put therapeutics in there because I think it has to be the way forward for the youngsters, which isn't in the UK curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
I think the level of contact lens knowledge coming out of university is frequently sadly lacking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there should be an understanding that contact lenses, which are my passion, have to be understood, but they have to be understood why you're doing them, because contact lens business is a loyal, steady, constant business.
Right.
And during the COVID period, that kept our practice going because we are highly passionate about care plans. We put now mm-hmm. all of our patients on a care plan. There is no patient in our practice now that can come just on an ad hoc basis. Everyone is on a subscription model plan.
Interesting.
And contact lenses started that process. So we have no contact lens patients whatsoever that are not on a plan, because what do you need to do with a contact lens? You need to care for that patient and the contact lens. And so if we don't put them onto a care plan, we're not caring enough. So
right.
Care plans are the way forward. They're the subscription model. Who isn't on Netflix? Who doesn't put their dog or their child on some kind of care level? And dental plans, vet plans, optical plans are the way forward. And we've gone totally private and totally care plan in the last couple of months. And COVID brought that upon our decision making. And we are thankful, mm-hmm. God forbid, that there should be any good coming out of this. But there are some things. And one of them is we've taken a completely new turn on the business model.
That is fantastic. I think you shared such an interesting points here about the care plan and making sure that, first of all, you are updating your knowledge, whether it's contact lenses or any specialty, and knowing why you're doing it and at least having your basics strong. And the second about, you know, trying to create a plan which is going to help in a long care for a patient versus, you know, one-time thing where, okay, yeah, here's your contact lenses, you know, you're done. I'll see you again in 1 year or whenever. Sometimes you might just not see that patient again.
A long game. We want that patient for the rest of their lives.
Right. I think that should be everyone's target, isn't it? Once the patient is in, they should be your patient forever. But that's fantastic. Thank you so much, Brian, for sharing all those insights with us. Before I let you go, what would be your final takeaway message for the listeners?
Care. Care and have fun. And most of all, enjoy what you're doing. And if you do, the patients will realize that. And if they realize it, then they're going to have fun with you. So Just have fun.
Wonderful. Thank you so much once again, Brian, for all your time and the amazing pearls of wisdom that you've shared. I really enjoyed and learned a lot today, and I'm sure my listeners would do it too, and appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
It's an absolute pleasure.